Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690. I'm Dave Kaufman. I'm joined by Jay Farrar, and we are here to have some fun for the next couple hours.
So quick.
I know.
That was quick.
I know. We're going back to the old shortened deadlines.
I was cut off guard.
I know.
Yeah.
It
trying to log into Facebook and Twitter and
tell everybody
we got deadlines to meet, and it's the end. I'm like, oh, here, hi, we're on the air.
It happens. It happens.
Okay.
We're going back to the shortened version for now. Our abridged Arkell's version of deadlines for
okay.
the opening.
So we have a lot to talk about.
Well,
I guess.
That's it. There's just a huge show today, so
right.
we're going to get right to it. This is the final primetime Kaufman show of the summer, and we'll let you know our plans a little bit later in the program. But,
yeah, let me know too, Dave.
I will. I promise
okay,
I will give you.
You
plenty of heads up, Jay. As much heads up as I can. But yeah, we're going to have fun tonight. It's been a great summer. It's been a blast being in this station with the sun still shining.
Yes.
And we've had some
And people. There are people in the station when we arrive.
Actual human beings.
Yes.
It's really cool.
And the door is open. It's amazing.
We've got a huge show today, and I'm really excited. We're going to talk about, well, we're going to run the gamut. We're going to be talking football with Mo Khan, get some comedy from Torben Rolfson. We're waiting for Jim Friedman, who's going to be calling us from Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah. Big-time movie director. Directed this new film on HBO called Glickman. Story that I was not aware of that I really look forward to sharing with all of you. I think it's really one of the more fascinating sports journalism stories I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the first, well, definitely the first broadcaster who was first an elite athlete.
Uh-huh.
And we see that so much nowadays. But anyway, why don't we play this trailer for you? It's, again, from this new movie called Glickman, which is on HBO, screening now on HBO Canada.
Hello there, everybody. I'm Marty Glickman.
I don't ever remember walking as a young person. I always ran.
When I beat the world's record holder at 60 yards, I realized that I had a chance to make the Olympic team.
Can't say 36 Olympics without thinking what the U.S. did to Marty Glickman.
How could any person keep me from competing in those games?
He was the first jock turned broadcaster in the history of our media.
He invented the vernacular.
The key.
The lane.
Swish.
Swish.
Swish!
Marty embedded the game into the consciousness of America.
I would talk like him, I'd walk like him.
He had done something that really hadn't been done before, and I don't think it's been done since.
Glickman premiered on Monday, August 26th on HBO and has been running very consistently on HBO and HBO Canada ever since. And if you can see it, I really strongly, strongly recommend it. It was an hour and a half of pure goosebumps for me watching that. And we're lucky enough to be joined by the director of Glickman right now on the Kaufman Show. His name is Jim Friedman, and we welcome him. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's the pleasure's all ours. I don't know how to explain how I felt watching that movie. It hit at every emotion. It was fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much. Had you ever heard of Marty Glickman before you watched it?
I had not, and it's funny to think because, you know, all of the guys that he had mentored are guys that I grew up on, and I never put it together that they must have learned it from somewhere and from someone.
Yeah, you know, he was really the pioneer because when he started, you know, when sports broadcasting started on radio and later television, there were no such things as a sports broadcaster. So the actual, whoever was doing any kind of broadcast were sort of given sports. And then, so someone like a Ted Husing, who had that magnificent voice, he would cover sports, but he didn't really know that much about sports. And then Marty was the first, and now, of course, today, it's, you know, you go to the Newhouse School at Syracuse or all these different, Fordham teaches, you know, sports broadcasting. It's a whole profession.
And you see it. I mean, guys like Shaq go and do their summer school weekend, and suddenly they're qualified to be a broadcaster.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as a knock to Shaq, especially if I ever run into him. He's much larger than I am.
That's true.
But, you know, Glickman was really an original. He was the first athlete turned, or an elite athlete at that, turned broadcaster.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I worked for the man when I was 17, and I didn't know he was even an athlete. I only knew him as the voice of the New York Giants because he never referenced his athletic career when he broadcast because broadcasting was sacred to him. The game was the thing. You know, he had a famous line, the only one who tunes in to hear the broadcaster is the broadcaster's mother. You know, so Marty never referenced his athletic career. He said it informed his broadcasting because, you know, he understood what those athletes felt being a great football player at Syracuse University, and then later in 1936, at one time, the third fastest man in the world behind Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf.
Unreal. One of the other maxims that he really seemed to stick to was simplicity.
Yeah, he hated announcers who were too verbose and spoke too much, and really liked sparse language. And when I was writing the narration for this film, Marty was the memory of him was in my ear, and I really made it as sparse as possible, so he would have approved if he had heard it.
What did you do for him at 17?
I got to produce his late night radio show on WNEW. My brother had the job and had to go in the Army Reserves, and then I got it. And Marty taught me everything. And you know what I remember from that time is he never treated me like a high school kid. He treated me as his producer. You know, it gave me a tremendous professional confidence.
The man had an unending love for journalism and for sports, really.
Yeah, he wanted the profession of broadcasting. He wanted to teach it so it was done properly. He wanted people to respect it, and there was no one he would not help. He was known for calling people who had heard of him but had never had a personal relationship out of the blue and just going, you know, saying, why don't you come over tomorrow, we'll go over your tapes, you know, and working with people, never turned anybody down, and influenced now going on three generations of broadcasters. It's truly something special.
We're in conversation with Jim Friedman, the director of HBO's Glickman, the story of Marty Glickman, one of the greatest pioneers in sports broadcasting history, and also one of the greatest U.S. runners of at least the early year, middle of the 20th century. Let's talk about that for a bit. You said that he didn't talk about it with you. It must have been very difficult for him to reconcile making the Olympic team, traveling to Berlin, especially as a Jew, and then at the last minute being yanked out of the race.
Yes, because, you know, it was very spotty in terms of what people knew at that time. Remember, no internet, no television, simply radio. And there were several Jewish basketball players and one or two track stars that did boycott the Olympics and did not go to the Olympic trials. Marty was from the other school of thought. He wanted to prove that a Jew could be just as good as anyone else, and he relished the opportunity to go to Nazi Germany. And again, this is 1936, before most people truly understood what was going on in Nazi Germany. Looking from a 2013 perspective, it's hard to imagine that, but, people didn't really fully understand, the majority of the American public, what was happening there. He wanted to prove, and he never got his chance. He was denied that opportunity along with another Jewish runner, Sam Stoller. And because of World War II in 1940 and 44, there were no Olympics. So Marty Glickman was deprived that chance of a gold medal for all time.
And, of course, the blame, oddly enough, falls on the USOC, not on, obviously somebody was whispering in their ear, but this wasn't a directive from anywhere but the USOC. Nobody else could have taken him out of that race.
Correct. There are several points of view on what happened. And, again, you're talking about history 75-odd years ago, a little longer, actually. And some people believe it was track politics and that the USC head track coach, Dean Cromwell, preferred his two runners, who Stoller and Glickman had beaten in practice, Foy Draper and Frank Wyckoff, but he kept them on the team. And then there's another theory, which I adhere to simply because Marty was in the room. He believes it. And though it's not in the film, Mac Robinson, Jackie Robinson's older brother, who won the silver medal in the 200-meter race, who was on that team, was also in the room, and I have audio of him confirming Marty's story. Because there have been books written that have said just about anything. They've even questioned Marty's point of view on this. But I firmly believe that the U.S. Olympic coaches were influenced by Avery Brundage, who was the head of the U.S. Olympic Committee. And at the time, Marty did not know this, but later was proven to be a Nazi sympathizer and was a member of America First, along with Dean Cromwell, which in its latter years wanted to keep the U.S. out of the war and not fight Nazi Germany. And then later, 2 years after the Olympics, I show in my film that when the Nazis were about to build the German embassy in Washington, D.C., they awarded that construction contract to Avery Brundage. So it makes you feel they were saying thank you for something that he did.
It is.
In addition, we all know when Avery Brundage became the head of the IOC, International Olympic Committee, in 1972, when the Israeli athletes were massacred, he refused to stop the games. And, you know, I believe Marty's story on this, and he was denied the chance to run because we didn't want to show up Adolf Hitler. He was espousing this myth of Nazi Aryan supremacy. The American black athletes, led by Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf, were absolutely winning all the main gold and silver medals in the marquee events of the Olympics. And the idea of two Jews standing on the winning podium was too much for Hitler. And I believe Avery Brundage told the U.S. coaches to come up with this bogus story. The story was, on the day of the race, that the Germans were hiding world-class sprinters to upset the American team. Now, this is such an absurd lie because you cannot hide world-class sprinters. In order to be a world-class sprinter, you had to have run somewhere so the world knew about you.
The idea, I think in the movie it says, we would have won the race by 15 yards with Owens. We could win the race by 14 yards with Glickman.
Yeah, in fact, Marty and Sam Stoller practiced the baton passing, which is they said the only way we would lose was if we dropped the baton. And Owens and Metcalf had not practiced that. You actually lose precious seconds when you're handing the baton if you're not used to doing it. But it was, it was one of those moments, as Marty says, in the history of the modern Olympic Games, no fit American track and field athlete has ever not participated in the Olympic Games, except for Sam Stoller and Marty Glickman, the only two Jews on the 1936 Olympic team, which were held in Nazi Germany.
And then amazingly, he comes home, he shrugs it off, he stars for Syracuse in college football, and then gets this opportunity to be a broadcaster, and from what I can gather, really becomes the king of New York.
Yeah, he was, Frank Gifford has a quote when he first came to New York, the famous giant football player. He said, I came to New York, it was Marty Glickman was typical New York, it was big time New York, and New York is big time. and you know, that's Marty Glickman really was, people have to understand listening today, the games were blacked out or not televised at all, so people would say, did you see the game? And they'd say, yes, I saw it on radio with Marty. He painted this word's eye picture. He revolutionized basketball radio play-by-play by giving listeners a geography of the court and inventing basically the NBA dictionary of the key, the lane, the midcourt stripe, swish. These are all Marty Glickman words that announcers today don't know where they emanated from.
And if you look at, you know, the people that you spoke to for this film, I mean, just some of the greatest A-list broadcasters, journalists, I mean, even looking at who executive produced this movie, I mean, produced by Scorsese, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know Marty Glickman, you will know the people in the film who were influenced by Marty Glickman. Marv Albert, Bill Bradley, Mike Breen, Jim Brown, Bob Costas, Frank Gifford, Jerry Stiller, Larry King, Oscar Robertson, David Stern, Elliot Gould. I could go on and on. And, you know, when I called these people up, they didn't know who I was. I was a first-time filmmaker, and when I mentioned Marty Glickman, they said, you know, where do you want me and when?
Hmm. Isn't that something I'll say? Now, for you to have gotten to make this film about a guy that mentored you, it's must have been pretty special.
It was, I had heard the expression a labor of love, and I never truly understood it till I embarked on this. And it was a long and very difficult journey in terms of finding all this footage and getting it donated. But, you know, when you have to live with somebody for 3 years, who better to live with than Marty Glickman? I mean, what a great man this guy was, and deserved to have his story told. One of the reasons I wanted to make it, when I later moved to the Midwest and settled in California, people had never heard of Marty Glickman, and I was stunned by this. And he never really got the national recognition as a broadcaster that he so craved, because it just, you know, they didn't really have many ethnic national broadcasters. you know, even today you don't hear a heavy Southern accent or heavy New York accent on the air. The first Jewish national broadcaster, I believe, who we knew was Jewish, was Howard Cosell.
Let's remind me again what Mel Allen's real name is.
Oh, Mel is real. I watched
How
all
about
the
Jackie
games as a kid. I didn't know he was Jewish.
No, I had no idea, and you wouldn't ever think it just
Never.
From hearing him speak. I mean,
Never.
Anyway, Jim, I want to close off just by talking about there's a wonderful moment of redemption in the film towards the end. In 1985, when the New York Giants, a team that Glickman had been the play-by-play guy for 15 years, was it?
23 total.
23 total years. They invited him to an exhibition game that the Giants were playing at the Olympic Stadium in Berlin.
Yes, Marty went back twice to Berlin. He went back the first time almost 50 years after he had not been given the opportunity to run. And when he was walking on the track, all this anger spewed out of him. And he didn't know where it came from. He didn't realize he was holding this in for 49 years. He was a board member of the Jesse Owens Foundation. Jesse had passed away, and Marty was giving out the Amateur Athlete Award in Jesse's name, and that's why he was in Berlin the first time. And he was shocked at how bitter that these guys, the American Olympic Committee and Avery Brundage, had done this, not just to him, but how could you do this to any 18-year-old kid? And I realized there the heart of my film was, what happens when an 18-year-old's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice? Do they become bitter, or do they triumph in life? Well, Marty Glickman not only triumphed, but he used sports as a means of transcending the divisions created by race, class, and religion. Then 9 years after his first trip back, he went back one more time with the New York Giants. And the broadcaster asked him, you know, what are your feelings now? And Marty answered something like, sadness, wonderment. Just a few minutes ago, I was sitting in Adolf Hitler's box. I was there. He was not.
Jim, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. Just an incredible story, and I loved the film, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Thank you, David. It'll be on HBO Go right now. You can get it anytime. It's playing throughout the month of September. If you want to follow anything on Glickman the Film on Twitter and Facebook, and also my website, Glickman the Film, you'll see clips, you'll see great pictures of Marty and stories. And I appreciate your time, Dave. It's very
Thank
nice
you,
of you to have me on.
Thank you. A wonderful film and a great conversation. Thanks so much.
Okay, Dave. Bye.
There he goes. Jim Friedman, the director of Glickman the Film. Cool story, AJ.
What a story.
Isn't that incredible?
You know that Jesse Owens even spoke up in the locker room and said, give these guys a chance to run. But Cromwell shut them down real quick.
Cromwell said,
you'll do as you're told.
Boy.
Boy.
An incredible story. And, you know, I know not everybody has HBO, but the film will be released on DVD a little bit later on in the fall. And an important watch if you like sports.
Sure.
This is The Kaufman Show. Jay and I'll be back. They call me the Midnight Mover, Mr. Wilson Pickett, bringing us in on the Kaufman
they
Show.
They don't call you that.
Well, they will next week.
Okay.
When we move back to after Monday Night Football on Monday nights.
Monday Night Football. Dun, 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 dun. Bow, bow, bow.
It's going to be, you know what, it'll be give it a whole new spin after talking with Jim Friedman there.
Yeah.
When we listen to Monday Night Football on
yes!
Monday night.
Well, yeah, yes. There it is.
I love the idea that he invented swish.
Swish?
Swish. The term swish on the okay. basketball court. I know you don't hear it as much now. Yeah, yeah there's the, I mean, you hear nothing but net, I feel, more than you hear swish.
Yeah, well, every play-by-play guy has invented a word, I think. invented some kind of vernacular that now shows up in Webster's dictionary.
Shamalabadingdong.
Shamalabadingdong. A cannonading shot.
Is that a basketball? A cannonading shot?
No, that's Montreal Canadiens.
That Gallivan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like the Savardian, yeah. Savardian spinorama. Shot.
Yeah, the spinorama. Yeah.
I love the Savardian spinorama. The well, so yes, that is our big news. We are moving back to what time does it usually start, Jay?
The show?
When we're on after football. Midnight?
Usually
is
around
midnight fair?
Midnight we get it in, yeah.
Yeah, it's usually about midnight. Sometimes a little earlier if a game really drags on, it's a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be here, and we will bring you the best damn show that we can every Monday night after Monday Night Football right here on TSN 690 for the foreseeable future, and Jay and I could not be more excited about it. Okay, Jay could be a little bit more excited. No, man, this is where we, that's where our show shines. And Lord knows we've had some great times.
It does. And it's funny. You see the difference in the demographic. The callers that call in usually are a little more, how should I say, interesting.
I thought you were going to say inebriated.
I'll say interesting. You take whatever you want from that. But after midnight, yeah.
I don't know.
It gets a little more edgy. It's a little more fun.
We should throw out that challenge. Is Jay basically saying that the midnight callers are better than the 6:30 p.m. callers? Is that what just happened?
I'm saying that.
You hear that, all of you driving around in your cars right now?
I'm saying they just have less liquid in them. That's all I'm saying. It's very clear.
They're more caffeinated and
more caffeinated, yes.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We welcome all kinds here on the show.
Well, without them, we wouldn't have a show, right?
That's right.
All callers. You never know what's going to get to you.
You know what? One of my friends, I was away for the weekend with a dozen of my closest friends from high school, and a buddy of ours is getting married, and we rented a place up in Tremblant. And one of the friends of ours lives in Boston now.
Yes.
And listens to a ton of sports talk radio.
Yes.
And he asked me what the deal is with callers and, you know, whether how intense the screening process is.
Yeah.
And frankly, we don't ask for it to be intense at all.
No.
It would be appreciated if we knew exactly what the person who was calling wanted to talk about, but often the person who's calling in doesn't know until they get on the phone, and then we have a conversation.
Yeah, and why shy away from, you know, even the guys that are nuts? If there are nutsy callers coming in...
It's an awesome challenge.
I encourage this kind of behavior. I love it. Makes the show a little more interesting.
It's a great challenge to it is. Yeah. It is. Marco never lets
anybody on. He's just like, yeah, whatever. You're crazy? Perfect. You're going to be perfect with Kaufman.
Well, in that case, maybe we'll get to, was that Frank caller on number one? Frank from caller. Okay.
All right.
Perfect. Yeah. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690. We'll be back. Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show. Where's Dan Fielding when you need him? Yep, we're back. That's right.
God.
Yes.
Awful. God, is that awful.
Man, I loved that show when I was a kid, and it does not hold up.
It does not hold up. It's, I think I watched or some sort of repeat recently on, I don't know.
I think it's on Netflix or something
like
that.
Yeah. Anyways, wow. I'll never get that 40 seconds back that I tuned in and said, wow, yeah, this is not. It's a completely different show in 2013.
I remember Larroquette being amazing on that show.
No, yeah.
Amazing.
They're doing what they can, these actors, with this awful script.
Oh, goodness. Well, there is a method to my madness. I want to read you something that came across the wire just now. Indianapolis Colts rookie John Boyett was arrested on charges of public intoxication, disorderly conduct, and resisting arrest early Monday morning, reports from the Indianapolis Star. According to police reports, the 23-year-old, listed on the Colts roster as a reserve safety, refused to leave the Indianapolis bar Tiki Bob's after a bouncer denied him entry at 2:45 Monday morning.
Who'd want to leave there?
The bouncer then approached a uniformed cop in the vicinity to ask for assistance because Boyett was, quote, too intoxicated and cussing at patrons of the bar and people on the sidewalk. When the bouncer and the officer returned to the bar, of course he was gone, but he returned sometime later, where police attempted to place him under arrest. He resisted. He threw a stiff arm at one of the cops and then said, "You can't arrest me. I'm a Colts player."
There it is. I knew that would eventually come in.
That's the best part. That's the best part. And then he ran away. Ran down two streets through two alleys before the 5'10", 203-pound safety was eventually apprehended by four police officers. From the police report, Mr. Boyett had an odor of an alcoholic beverage about his person. His speech was slurred. His eyes were red and glassy. And he had a very abusive behavior towards everyone. The report also alleges that Boyett was combative and made threats to the officers, telling one, quote, "I'm going to come back and break your jaw."
Mm-hmm. Now, he was running away, and he got taken down by four cops.
Oh, wow.
Wow, no wonder he's the reserve safety. How's he keeping up with any wide receivers? I don't understand.
Booked on a $150 bond. Is that all? $150?
$150, not
really?
Bad.
Really? You get to... Wow.
You threaten a cop?
Well, run away from the cops?
There's charges on him, obviously, so...
Well, you see, he's being held right now in the Marion County Jail in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
And the Colts are aware of the situation.
I'm sure they are.
And are not commenting.
No. Why would they? We'll never see him again. That's too bad.
Oh, do you really think? I feel like this is the type of stuff in the NFL that just gets totally swept under the rug.
Well, yeah.
Back to the practice squad with you, boy.
Yeah, clearly you're going to have to shoot a guy before you take his... jersey away from the kids, you know. But yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds familiar. I've seen that a few times. People have this tendency to make a claim, whatever minor or minimal thing that they do in life, somehow becomes relevant when they're drunk.
I'm the host of a late night once a week talk show on TSN, buddy.
I've heard worse than that, you know. My cousin owns Palm Bread. Yeah, that's one I heard.
Was that like at an Expos game trying to be fan of the game or something?
I don't know what it was, but yeah, that's what she claimed.
And my cousin owns Palm Bread.
I said, okay, then why are you arguing over a $5.47 bill?
Do you know who I am?
Yeah. And then my doorman started singing the Palm theme in French to her, and that really set her off. But that's a different story for one of our midnight shows.
The Millhouse equivalent of that. My dad's a pretty big wheel down at the old cracker factory.
Yeah, but that's it. That I would have been impressed with. I said, wow, nobody has said those words string together since 1952. Awesome. Okay.
Although, to be fair,
I'm impressed.
In this town... if someone says, "Hey, man, don't you know who I am? I'm a member of the Montreal Canadiens." Oh, sorry, sir. Pardon me. My bad.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't picture any one of our Montreal Canadiens staking that claim.
No, I don't think. Well, not
you
not
can't
that,
do this. I'm a Colt.
What is this, like high school Texas football or something?
You think making a claim, excuse me, as an NFL player would actually stick some police on you, you know? They call in backup if you say you play in the NFL.
This Aaron Hernandez saga continues to unfold. I'll tell you, I don't think
not
I've
not in his favor either.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. I don't think I've ever seen, I guess this is old news now, but the Patriots did a jersey exchange. Anybody who had a Hernandez jersey could go and exchange it on a certain day.
Right.
And for whatever Pat's jersey they wanted. Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
I don't think so either. I mean... No,
it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's the precedence now. It's not, you know, I mean, the Cavaliers weren't going to do it when LeBron was traded.
No.
So it has to be if you kill someone.
Yeah.
What happens?
That's a pretty good reason.
What happens if somebody shows up to Foxborough in a Hernandez jersey? Is that allowed? I know, right?
You know, people who were wearing Michael Vick jerseys were pretty much demonized.
The NFL wouldn't let you get a Ron Mexico jersey. Remember
right.
He had the alias Ron Mexico?
Yes.
You couldn't put the name Mexico on the back of a jersey.
No. No, it's I don't know.
But you figure there are a lot of dudes out there named Hernandez. It's kind of a, you know.
Yeah.
A Spanish Smith.
Yeah, if it was a baseball jersey, you'd probably get away with it easier. But
I wonder what the how that works.
Well, I don't think there's any legal reason for someone to stop you from wearing a Hernandez jersey.
Yeah, but what kind of a tool would be still wearing the Hernandez jersey, too? I feel like you get into some serious freedom of expression stuff going on there.
Yeah. You know what? I'm sure there's someone somewhere who says, yeah, man, I don't care what they say. I'm going to rock my Hernandez jersey. He's innocent. You know, I don't know. Like, I'm sure there is.
Apparently, he's going to sound like Jeff Spicoli as well. Right?
Yeah,
dude.
I'm gonna. Yeah, he'd have to, right?
I wonder if
to make that kind of claim.
I wonder if it's a slam dunk case.
It's not looking good for him. Oh, that's for sure.
Jay, it's never looking when you're. No, it's never. No, it yeah. is not. There was a very
his own team have decided he's already guilty. They're barring his jersey. I mean, 100%.
Well, yeah. Look, from an optical perspective, that makes sense to me. Mm. Why would they want to keep him on the roster? Why would they're paying him $3 million, eh?
Yeah.
They're paying I think they might try to contest it, but the union's going to be will go to bat for him for that.
Really?
He's owed $3 million.
Go to bat for a murderer.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah, well that's how strong unions are, right?
Uh-huh. Wow.
No union has ever gone to bat for a murderer before.
Yeah, that's yeah. union, bat, and murder have That's been used right, together many, many times in the past.
As well as end zone and parking lots.
Yes. Yes.
It's usually Giant Stadium, though, not Foxborough, right?
Right. Maybe they should dig up the end zone and see what they'll find.
I'm curious to see how this case evolves, though. It's, I mean, and now he's allegedly involved in another homicide.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, apparently he was being investigated for something else beforehand, and guy doesn't seem to be very right in the head.
No.
Doesn't seem to have all his marbles together.
Well, the Rolling Stone article that argued that everything went downhill when his father passed away?
Uh-huh.
That at that point, I guess he started looking to gangs for father figures.
Yeah.
And boy, for the home of ESPN, the worldwide leader, Bristol sounds like a rough town, man.
Yeah.
Real rough around the edges.
Yeah. I don't know. That kind of thing is... That's where my libertarian...
Which part?
Well, oh, my father died. I'm going to join a gang. I mean, you know. I mean, it's easy to blame something on your own behavior, but I don't know. I mean, everybody's situation is different, and I don't want to be undermining, you know,
well,
people's
Lord knows
problems.
Lord knows he could have found those role models on a football field, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he seems to have been good enough, you know.
Yeah,
he made it all the way to the NFL, became a star in the
NFL.
When
you're that good,
yeah.
Then people cover for you. They don't necessarily talk to you the way they should.
Right.
Your college football coach may have eyes on a bigger prize.
And people start making up excuses like, oh, since he lost his father, he's gone the wrong way.
That's it.
Maybe he's just a murderer.
Right.
Maybe he's just
jerk.
Nuts
right.
and a jerk. Maybe he just has no regard for human life. How about that?
Play us out, Dick Wolf.
A series of porn themes on the Kaufman Show.
Welcome back. It's great, Marco. Kong Kong, how
These
are you?
These are their stories.
That's right. I'm Dave Kaufman. I'm with Jay Farrar. This is the final Kaufman Show primetime edition.
Ever? Oh, jeez. You scared me.
Primetime edition.
Sorry.
We move back to, who's that guy we're up against? David Lett or something?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Some late night something,
yeah,
TV
whatever.
Something.
Let him stay in second place.
That's right.
As he always has.
That's right. He's behind our Tonight Show. You can follow Jay on Twitter at The Farrar Side. I am at The Kaufman Show. And our next guest is at Van Guy, V-A-N-G-U-Y, not because he lives in one down by the river. He is from Vancouver, British Columbia. His name is Torben Rolfson, and he's our resident in-house comedian. Torben, good evening.
You're putting the band back together. Hey, Dave. Hey, Jay.
You know
hey.
It. How are you, man?
I'm doing great.
Good. What's going on?
Well, it's been reviewing the half week in sports.
Yes, this hell of a half week, right?
It really has been.
You can catch me up.
The New York Jets signed Brady Quinn today. They're off to a great start as Super Bowl hosts by ensuring they don't take up one of the two spots.
Marco.
It's a new rim shot. All right.
Four QBs on that Jets roster. That's more than the number of Quinn jerseys they'll sell. Can you imagine working in a Jets team store from Tebow jerseys last year to this?
It's kind of
laying off garment workers in China.
Oh, jeez.
That story about Urban Meyer banning agents from wearing blue while watching Ohio State practice went national. Add fashion consulting to the list of Buckeyes football player majors.
Wow.
NBA, the Knicks' J.R. Smith says he's 100% sure New York will win the NBA title this coming season. His math is even worse than the execs that structure the Knicks' player contract.
Wow.
The reason Odom arrested for DUI after police pulled him over for driving too slow. He was moving so slow in the lane, they thought he was Aaron Gray.
Jay, you were going to say?
I was going to say the reason we're using the Law and Order theme as rim shots
is because Marco gets his behind the board and gets to choose.
No, it's that's one reason, and also because you're up for litigation anytime. Every joke that you say there. Torben, okay. You could be sued for it, so that's
right,
why
I'll
we're doing
thinking
it.
About that.
That's me covering for Marco.
Okay, thank you. Diana Naya today became the first person to swim from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage. Luckily, last week I sold all my stock in Shark Cage Company. I thought this swim had the potential to pop the shark cage bubble. The crew on our escort boat was the starting pitching rotation of Cuba's national team.
What?
The crew on her escort boat was the starting pitching rotation on Cuba's national team.
Yeah, nice. We heard you, Torben. That what wasn't because I didn't hear what you said.
I thought you were warning me that Castro was going to sue me.
Bong bong.
Baseball award favorites are emerging. Don Mattingly, babysitter of the year.
Nice.
And there was a poorly promoted post-sporting event concert in South Africa that left singer Brandy performing in a 90,000-seat stadium in front of 40 people. That's like doing the anthem at Marlins Park.
Oh, wow.
And two men got inside Wrigley Field at 3:45 a.m. by squeezing through metal security bars. The method of entry led police to rule out Cubs fans as suspects.
Nice one.
Torben, well done.
That
man.
Was a good
Finally,
one.
It was actually two Phillies fans. They tried to steal ivy from the walls but were caught by security cameras and arrested. They were charged with misdemeanor trespassing and disturbing Andre Dawson's sleep.
Torben well Rolson, ladies and gentlemen. Van Guy on Twitter. Torben, you're going to make the move to the late night hour with us?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. We can't wait to hear from you. I don't know if it'll be next week, because next week there's a doubleheader.
Okay.
So I have a feeling we're probably not going to start the show at 2 o'clock in the morning. We'll see what the schedule is on the station. What was that, Jay?
No, nothing.
Was that Jay snoring in the middle of the show? That should be fun
to
deal with.
We'll talk to you in a couple weeks, then.
Wonderful. Torben, thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great night, guys.
You too. Follow him on Twitter at VanGuy, everybody. Full of those Henny Youngman-esque one-liners. It's Torben Rolfson. Let's take a break, Marco, and we will return.
Yeah.
On this little thing called the Kaufman Show.
Yeah. The band is back together because iTunes have replaced CDs and we need to go on tour and make some money.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690. Japan Droids, Knights of Wine and Roses. Mr. Farrar, what is up?
What is up, man?
Well, you look like you had something burning through your brain you had to get out
constantly. Constantly.
Torben mentioned it briefly, but I feel like it deserves a bit of a follow-up. Diana Nyad, the first human person ever.
Yes.
Not the first woman, the first human.
Human.
To complete a swim from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage.
Or flippers or any kind of protection.
You know that she's 64 years old.
She is.
It's an incredible tale. She tried to do this in 1978. Yes, Marco?
That's why the sharks didn't want it.
The 64-year-old Nyad started in Havana, Cuba on Saturday morning and did the 103-mile, 53-hour journey a little before 2 o'clock today in the Florida Keys. It was her fifth attempt. She had tried, like I said, in 1978, twice in 2011, and once in 2012. She had previously said that this would be her final attempt at accomplishing the distance. It has been done before with a shark cage. A 22-year-old named Susie Maroney completed it using a shark cage.
Mm.
Now, when you don't use a shark cage, I think you have a team of people with electric prods around you. Like, you're not just out in the open.
No, there seemed to be pretty much a squadron of boats all around her.
Yeah.
You know, keeping an eye out, making sure that there's nothing dangerous coming near her. But, wow.
They can't protect under her, though.
No, I know, but
can you imagine how exhausting that must be? I can't even.
I wish people would put their energy into something that can.
What?
I don't know. Swimming across the ocean, why? So you can get a paragraph in a Guinness Book of World Records?
I don't think that's what it's about. I don't think.
What's it about?
You don't chase it for 35 years to get a paragraph in the Guinness Book of World Records. This is like. This is like my friend that we've had on the show a couple of times that does the death races. You want it. People want to challenge
the body human.
Yes.
They want to test their limits. They want to see what they can do.
It's self-serving. It's self-serving in the end. I mean,
of course it is.
Imagine we can channel this energy into...
Into what, curing cancer?
Yeah. Why not?
Well, I don't think she's... I don't think she's trained to do that.
No, she's obviously not. She's trained to swim across the ocean with sharks.
Well, she's a long-distance swimmer, I guess. A long-distance ocean swimmer.
I just don't understand that.
I see what you're saying. I mean, okay, maybe she's raised money for some sort of charity in doing it. Would that make you feel a little bit better
Diana
Nyad?
It would be, but I haven't heard anything about that. I mean, it's been on CNN all day, yesterday.
It's the fifth time, Jay. You think the first four times she solicited stuff and she never got there. So if people probably thought, forget it.
So she said, forget it. I'm just going to do it and just get. I mean, her mouth was swollen from the salt water, you know, and the, you know, jellyfish things all over her body. I mean, what is.
Well, you know, 53 hours in the water.
Yeah.
Bruce Arthur might have said it best. Diana Nyad, a 64-year-old lesbian, just swam from Cuba to Florida without a shark cage. Eat it, Putin.
Oh.
Let's take a break. We've got a sports update coming up, and then we're going to help Kaufman cheat on his fantasy football draft.
I was going to ask the same thing.
We got Mo Khan at 7 o'clock, and he's going to give us a primer so that we don't look like idiots in front of our friends.
I want to ask first.
Good. Good. And if anybody wants to call in and ask questions of Mo Khan, by all means, Mo knows football. Wow, that sounds original. I wonder if that's ever been taken before.
Mm.
Mo knows. Call Nike.
Yeah.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690. I'm Dave. That's Jay.
It's me.
That's you. And Jay has decided to jump into the fray of NFL fantasy football for the first time ever.
For the first time ever.
Wow. Yeah. How did you hold off this long, man?
I don't know. Logic? I don't know. Somehow one of my buddies convinced me. Participate in a fantasy football league, and I said I simply don't have the time to do this with my work at the pub here at the station and other projects I'm working on. And then he said nonsense. He didn't say nonsense. It started with a B, but I said all right.
But nonsense.
Yeah. Then he told me what the pot was, and
suddenly
it's a different kind of thing going on here.
Is a straight up, nobody has any players. Like, my draft tonight is a keeper league.
Right.
So I've had Drew Brees since, goodness, since he signed.
2004.
since he signed with the Saints.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's a keeper league.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
When I got Drew Brees, it was a chance. I was taking a shot. He was off the shoulder surgery.
Yeah.
And there was no guarantee.
We draft on position. Each position has a certain amount of points depending on a touchdown, on a running play, on a kick. The defense is an entire team.
So yeah, that's standard.
That's standard, yeah.
That's standard.
And there's a waiver.
Yep, that's standard too.
Yeah, so if we have an injury, I think every Tuesday we have a waiver draft just in case we have an injury of some kind.
You just got to stay on top of it, Jay.
Yeah, but I don't have the time. But apparently, that's nonsense.
That's right.
According to my friend Lamar.
That's right. Benonsense, yeah. Even.
Benonsense.
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 Well, somebody who does not think that it's benonsense would definitely be our next guest, Mr. Mo Khan, who is the resident NFL expert at our radio station, TSN 690, and is a friend of mine. And I'm a fan of his show, The Midnight Snack, a fantastic radio program. And Mo's going to help us out, help you guys out, and we're going to talk a little fantasy football right now. Hello, Mo.
Gentlemen, how you guys been?
We're great. How are you?
Not bad. Just to ask Jay, you know, Jay, it's just once a week you're playing football. It's not like baseball or hockey or basketball mm-hmm. where every single day you have to set your lineup, take out this guy, put this guy in. It's only once a week. So
this is true.
That's why fantasy football is very popular with the females especially who have gained more interest because all they have to do is play once a week, and that's how they become fans of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Dave Kaufman and Jay Farrar and Mo Khan.
And by once a week, you mean Sundays, Mondays, and sometimes Thursdays, right?
And
Saturdays.
On radio, yeah.
Yeah.
On Saturdays, yes.
It's the whole getting up early on Sunday thing, which is not very appealing, especially with my schedule.
No, but you can set it before you go to bed.
I know, but why would I do that? It's nonsense.
Mo, do you think most people start fresh every year, or most leagues keeper leagues?
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Dave. And by the way, you should be hailed as the GM of the century for keeping Drew Brees or taking a chance on him back in 2006.
No, because really that's the only good thing I've ever done in that league. They still call me the Drew Brees Dancers.
Well, I'll tell you this, though. I mean, fantasy football, again, it's so tough to dissect which player who is going to do well each year. We all know injuries can be a big factor in how it plays out. But in hindsight, though, when you look at, say, for example, Drew Brees, right? You've had him every single year since 2006.
Right.
He's a surefire touchdown maker for the team. I know last year he had an off year with the high amount of INTs he threw, but now with Sean Payton back in the fold, I think Drew Brees will do even much more better this year and could have a breakout year, like even bigger than what he's done the last couple of years, and throw for more touchdowns and more yards. And that's what you want, touchdown guys, and guys who are in catch the ball if it's a PPR league or if it's not a PPR league for that matter.
Sorry, PPR?
Points per reception.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. I think that will help a lot of us out there.
Yes, PPR. I'm just writing that down here.
Now, if you have an open league where, you know, your buddies meet up once a year and you start fresh, Drew Brees right. isn't the first quarterback you're taking, though, is he?
No, exactly. Let's say, for example, it's a standard league, right, where it's touchdown heavy, for example.
Sure.
So touchdowns are the premium for anything. So receptions won't count for anything. It's yards and touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You look at a guy like, say, Adrian Peterson, running back for the Minnesota Vikings, as being your first pick. You always go running back normally in the first round because those are the guys that touch the ball most often. That's not a quarterback. In the case that it is for, say, Adrian Peterson, Aaron Foster, the Houston Texans, for example, Maurice Jones, Drew from the Jacksonville Jaguars, just to name running backs offhand here. Those are the guys that you looked at that, all right, they're going to get about 300 touches in the football. They're more likely to make a bigger impact stats-wise through the touchdown department or receptions if you're playing a PPR league.
Drew is an interesting mention because he did not have the greatest of years last year.
No, he didn't. And you know what? He's now 29 years old. He's taking a lot of wear and tear on his body, come off an injury. He's a free agent after next year. So he probably has a bit of motivation to what will probably be his next big contract, whether it's with Jacksonville or not. And even though Jacksonville has an anemic offense with Blaine Gabbert, a quarterback who I don't recommend to take at all for your fantasy football purposes, I would definitely suggest that Maurice Jones-Drew could be a late first round, if not early second round pick for those who are in need of a running back if they don't take one in the first round.
How important are special teams and defenses in fantasy football, Mo?
Well, you know, it depends, right? Because some leagues, for example, a buddy of mine has a league, and he does everything. He goes offensive players, defensive players, and team defense.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty intense. And I was actually doing it for a buddy of mine who couldn't do it on Saturday because he had a wedding. But, you know,
nonsense. Sorry.
Nonsense. Always. But team defenses are very important because the key is, obviously, you look at Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Dallas Cowboys, Houston Texans, the Niners, and Seahawks, for example. You always look at those as being the top Ds of the NFL here. But also the key is schedule. Who are these teams playing during that season? Because obviously you want to see, well, if they're playing the Raiders, the Cleveland Browns, and the Jacksonville Jaguars, you're more likely going to take that defense because you're going to have yourself a huge stat day, whether it's three sacks in the defense or three INTs. So you always look at the schedule and who that team is playing because that is a big, big part of why you take a team defense, not early, but later towards the end of the draft.
Now, let's talk about kickers for a second. I remember a long time ago when I was a real newbie at this fantasy football stuff, overbidding on a kicker and getting ridiculed to this day for it, frankly. And how important is a kicker? Should you be waiting till the end? Is that the kind of a garbage play for you? Should you be thinking more about everybody else and then just get an average guy?
With kickers, obviously, you're not going to take a kicker. If it's like a 15, 16-round draft, you take them between rounds 11 through 15, 11 through 16, whatever the number of rounds you have here. And I think with a kicker, obviously, they are key because it gets you points through field goals and extra point attempts. And the key, though, is that if you always want to be the trend guy. You always want to start the trend of taking that guy from that position. In the case of kickers, you've always noticed that, say, rounds 12, 13, 14, 15, or even 16, the trend begins at that point where you take a kicker, and you always look for a guy who's on a team. They may not be able to score touchdowns, such as say Sebastian Janikowski, or maybe Jacksonville's kicker, or a team that's not known to score points at all. You want to take Steven Gostkowski from New England because he's a guy that only gets you extra points because Tom Brady throws a lot of touchdown passes. But you always take a kicker towards the end of a draft because you know that that's where the trend will begin, and that's where they'll have a lot of points. Is from, say, Janikowski, who most likely will have a big year with the Raiders this season.
Mo, in the selection of a quarterback, I mean, the NFL really is in the era of the quarterback right now. So, I mean, keeping your quarterback for a little bit later, would that be a wise decision? Because there are so many good offensive quarterbacks right now in the NFL. It's not like back in the day where you can name the great quarterbacks on one hand. You know, you can count them on three fingers. You got three quarterbacks. Do you think you should, because I would, this was a suggestion from someone that I should keep my quarterback for a little bit later in the draft as opposed to a wide receiver or running back.
Wow. That's it. Well, sorry, Jay. Well, that's it though, because you look at a quarterback, right? I mean, it depends on how many teams are in your league. If it's a 10 team league, 12 team league, 14, if not 16.
We're 14.
Well, that's it though, right? That's a high number of teams.
Yeah.
So if I were you, I mean, I for example, I would definitely take a quarterback early on because, let's say, hypothetically, you end up with the 14th pick. So you essentially would have a double pick because of the snake draft.
Right.
You know, essentially, that once you make your first two picks, you're not picking for another 28 picks, essentially, here. So I would definitely look at taking a quarterback with your first or second pick of the draft because, in hindsight, when it comes back to you for your third and fourth round picks, you may not end up with the quarterback that you desire and end up with, say, a B or C class quarterback that may not be able to put up the points or touchdowns that you look for from that position.
Let's move over to tight ends, Mo, which is obviously a very important position. There are certain guys that you always try and target. You know, in years past, it's been guys like Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates. With players like Aaron Hernandez not available this season, who do you think are the tight ends that people should be targeting?
you know what? Yeah, you can go right back to New England. And I'm not talking about Rob Gronkowski, but his rookie teammate now, Zach Sudfeld, who's had a strong preseason for Tom Brady in that Patriot offense. He's a guy that, you know, if you look at draft trends right now, he's moving up the trends right now as we speak. He has gone from being a late-round pick to now being like a mid-round pick here. Of course, tight ends, it goes back to the same principle. Is it a points-per-reception league? If it is, you always go to tight ends such as Jason Witten, who had over 100 receptions last year, being Tony Romo's security blanket. So really, you look at guys like Witten, Vernon Davis from the Niners, Tony Gonzalez, as you pointed out before, from Atlanta. His numbers might take a dip because of all the weapons that they have for Matt Ryan down there. The key is, though, Dave and Jay, you always got to find yourself a solid second tight end because, obviously, with the bye week, that will play at some point here. You got to find yourself an adequate tight end, such as, say, Brandon Myers from the New York Giants, who had over 80 catches, I believe, with the Raiders last year. So guys like Brandon Myers, Zach Sudfeld, these are the guys that you would look for in the mid to late rounds of the draft who could definitely be good additions as, say, a tight end number two, if not tight end number three, if you go double tight ends in your starting lineup.
These are things to be aware of course. This bye week is something that would confuse somebody who's new to football. You don't want to draft two kickers who both happen to be off on the same Sunday.
Well, that would be a big no-no. It's a waste of spots in your roster, Dave. But without question, obviously, when you look at your draft trends, I mean, whether it's kicker or not, you always want to be vigilant of who has bye weeks. Because when you look at your picks, if you end up having three of your key guys on a bye week, that will definitely hurt your chances of winning that week. So you try to get guys who don't have the same bye week. But also, when you draft a quarterback, you always look for a quarterback that does not have a bye week of that same week. So really, it's a matter of you being vigilant of what you see on the computer screen and not letting that get by you, because if you do end up with four or five guys on a week 8 bye, it's going to hurt your numbers for sure.
We're talking about the ins and outs of fantasy football with Mo Khan, the host of the Midnight Snack on TSN 690. He's also on Game Points with Matthew Ross, and you can follow him on Twitter at MoKhan19. Mo, how long would you wait before releasing a struggling player?
I'm the belief. I always try to visualize. I visualize myself just like you did with Drew Brees. You don't want to release a guy 1 week too early or 1 week too late. I'm always patient, even though I'm not in actual contact with that player to say, let's play here. You don't want to do that too early. For example, I'll give you DeMarco Murray from the Dallas Cowboys. A couple of years ago in his rookie year, I took him with my last pick, and he didn't play right away. And I still kept with him, and then I finally put him in the lineup against St. Louis. And what did he do? He rushed for 200 plus yards against the Rams. So really, at first, for example, like as I mentioned before, Zach Sudfeld from the Patriots, he may not put the numbers right away, but you want to remain patient with him because at some point he will get his due time to showcase his skill sets, and it's paid off. Rob Gronkowski was the exact same example, where his rookie year, he did nothing for the first 6-7 weeks, and then against the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday Night Football, had a hat trick of touchdowns. So it's always be patient, but also be aware of what's going on in the waiver wire, because if there's a guy out there that's hot, you pick him up and try to stash that no-name guy and then release him and bring back a no-name guy down the road.
Let's talk about maybe some of the rookies that you think are worth targeting that people don't necessarily know.
Well, obviously, with your draft tonight, Dave, you can look at a guy like Giovanni Bernard from the Cincinnati Bengals, running back, who they took from North Carolina. He's a guy that may project could be sort of in the Aaron Foster mold, getting a lot of touches on the football and being an effective running back early on. But, of course, with running backs, it takes them a bit longer than usual for them to adapt to the NFL level. Zach Sudfeld from the Patriots, another guy from the Bengals to point out, Tyler Eifert, tight end. He's a guy that's done very well in college, and they think now with the Bengals and how they're built with the offense being tight end heavy, he could have a big explosive year for the Bengals as well. And then you look at receivers, I would be very leery of taking the receiver early on because they are in a position of a higher learning curve. Thus, they may not put numbers right away, but running backs and tight ends, especially tight ends, will be the key to look at.
On a personal note, in order for me to have some sort of stimulated interest in this, I'd like to include an Oakland Raider in my draft. Who would you... Is it that bad? Who, if anybody,
that was
Mo,
just the NSA.
That was the
NSA.
Yeah. If anybody, Mo, any Oakland Raider to include in your draft, who would it be?
Darren McFadden, running back. He too, just like Maurice Jones-Drew, going into a contract year. He too, coming off an injury, he has not played a full year in his NFL career. I think since 2009, I believe. He can be a guy you can look at from a Raiders perspective that has value. Another guy that you could take a long look at as a late-round pick is Rod Streeter, second-year receiver, who they think could have a big year in terms of receptions and yards, and also Denarius Moore, another receiver from the Oakland Raiders. Right now, Oakland, I want to look at them aside from Janikowski, McFadden's being the first two targets of that draft. But otherwise, if you're looking for someone desperate that you want to stash on your roster, Rod Streeter can be one guy, and Denarius Moore can be another guy that could help out your receiving court if you're looking for a late third receiver on your roster on Sunday afternoon.
And here's why we wait so late to do this draft. Buffalo just picked up former Dolphins kicker Dan Carpenter.
There you go.
There, that's the only reason why. We needed to know where Dan Carpenter was going to be, or the world would not
just
be complete.
Write that down. So no one on the Raiders then, Mo, is that what you're saying?
I would look at McFadden. McFadden probably would be, it's not a second-round pick, probably early third-round pick, but he definitely is dropping down because, again, injury concerns and the fact the Raiders may not be as good or they won't be good this year, that will result in them having a big year stats-wise.
Okay. How many of these do you do a year, Mo?
You know what, Dave? I only do one fantasy draft.
Really?
Because, Dave, at the end of the day, when you do multiple fantasy drafts, you're always going against each other. I want this guy to do well, but I don't want that guy to do well in my other draft. I do one and one and only with my buddies, fun league and this and that. But this year, I had to do three other drafts for my buddies because they're either at a wedding or out of town. So I spent, I think, close, I believe, to 10 or 12 hours on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday combined doing fantasy drafts for my buddies.
I don't think people realize how excruciating of an event this can be.
why are we doing this? There's so much math involved. Why are we doing this? What are we doing to ourselves?
It's not really the math. It's this incredible dread about sitting in a room with, you know, 12 guys who are all just really frustrated and want to have this finish.
Yeah.
And then it ends and you're like, oh man, that was so much fun. I can't wait for next year.
Yeah.
But that whole lead up is just such a, oh, the things I'd rather be doing tonight.
Well, mine's online. We're doing ours online.
Yeah. Oh, no. We sit around in a room.
Really?
And do an auction. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Last year I was in Toronto on business. I had to pipe in via like Google conference, like a video link.
Yeah.
It felt very...
Really?
It felt very...
is the country under attack?
Exactly.
What is that?
The Situation Room. Let's bring in the president.
What's the name of your league, Dave?
We're the Player Haters Ball.
The Player Haters Ball.
Hate.
What about you, Mo? What's the name of your league?
Zoo Bears Only.
Zoo Bears Only.
Yeah.
There's an inside joke to it, actually.
I'm sure it is, yeah. We are the professional ballas. Yeah.
Well, the Player Haters Ball, of course, is a Chappelle reference.
Yes, of course.
And we'll stick with that one for us. Until Dave sues us, we're going to stick with that
right one.
Mo, this has been a pleasure, man. Thank you.
Hey, guys, enjoy your work as always. And keep the primetime hours rolling, my friend.
Well, this is the last one, but we'll keep it rolling for the next half an hour.
I'll be listening.
Then we move back to after Monday Night Football starting next week, sir.
And I'll listen to that as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Mo. Follow him on Twitter at MoCon19 and listen to him on all of the shows on this station. Thanks, Bo.
Damn it, I forgot to take notes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's okay. I tried to take notes, and the pen stopped working.
It did, didn't
so
it?
So I just have a couple. Yeah, you
have
saw
one,
me swear,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the Kaufman Show. We're going to take a break. Marco's got an update for you. We've got Milos Raonic battling at the U.S. Open right now. I was going to give you a score, but our TV just went out. No, it's 5-all in the first set.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was up 4-2?
He was up 4-2. He was also down 2-0.
Mm.
So this is worth keeping an eye on. And you could just stick with us on TSN 690 and we'll bring you all of those updates. Here comes Marco. Hang tight. And Jay and I have about a half an hour left with you. We'll take some calls. 514-790-1690. 1-866-896-2546. This is The Kaufman Show.
You make me feel a little older. Like a fool. They were the soundtrack for the night.
Welcome back. It's the Kaufman Show on TSN 690, finishing up our primetime run here, and it's been a pleasure. If you hadn't heard us before, we are on late nights on Monday, and we're looking forward to it. Maybe I'm looking forward to hearing from Mike from Longueuil.
Mike from Longueuil.
Isn't it Longueuil? Isn't that where he calls from?
No, Mike.
Mike's from, no.
St. Leonard.
St. Leonard. Thank you, St. Leonard.
Man, even I knew that.
You are an integral part of the show, Jim.
I miss Mike.
I miss Mike, too.
Yeah.
Salber33 on Twitter, one of our favorite callers. And we'll hear from Travis, and we'll hear from George, and we'll hear from Mike, and we'll hear from Jim. And it's going to be fun. Juan's one of my favorites. Juan from La Romana, right?
No, Ron.
Oh, Ron.
Ron, yeah.
We love Ron. We love Ron. We love Ron from Montreal North. Marco, I'm going to turn on my, can you just pop on my computer? Thank you, sir. You know, one of the things I've always wanted to do is, and I didn't get to do it, is go to Wrigley Field and hear somebody belt out Take Me Out to the Ball Game. The only time I went to Wrigley, they didn't play the song. No. It was the 1 year anniversary of 9/11.
Oh.
So every inning in and out, they played John Lennon's Imagine.
Okay.
Which was kind of cool, but here's Bobby Hull singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Wrigley Field. Enjoy, everybody.
First time. Today's guest conductor for Take Me Out to the Ball Game, former Chicago Blackhawk and Hall of Famer Bobby Hull. Chicago fan, Blackhawk fan, let me hear you. A one and a two and a three. Okay. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks.
Jeez.
That's one of the worst ones I've heard.
Yeah.
How do you not know? He's got a sheet of paper in front of him. Obviously, it's giving him the lyrics. But how do you not know the rhythm of the song?
He's also got a few glasses in front of him. You know that, right?
Probably, yes.
That's Bobby Hull.
Probably, yes. I mean, it wasn't quite on the, you know, Kissing Susie Colbert level of Joe Namath-ness, if you will.
He was, when he was doing the counting, he was counting how many pops he had. He had no idea that the lyrics are the same.
Well, in that case, it was only one or two, right?
Right.
So, one, two. I mean,
three pops, you're out.
The intention of the segment was not to make fun of Bobby Hull being drunk.
Yes, it was.
It was to make fun of Bobby Hull, period.
Okay. <That's laughs> yeah. We can't even make an excuse for him. We're just going to make fun of him as a person.
We got some crazy weather going on out here, eh?
Yeah, it is. It's pretty nuts out there.
I'm watching the lightning just go crazy right behind you, Mr. Farrar.
Great.
Where'd you park?
I parked right out front.
Oh,
so
okay, good.
I'm okay.
Cool.
I don't care. Weather doesn't bother me. It's just rain and lightning.
Snow.
And snow and tornadoes. It's fine.
Weather doesn't bother you?
Weather doesn't bother me. I'm not one of those people. I see, you know.
So you don't blame the weatherman when the weather gets bad?
No. No, okay. I don't blame the weather woman either, believe me.
Good.
Yeah, it's not a good thing.
Weather person, I think, is probably the preferred nomenclature.
Oh, whatever. Okay. Whatever it is. Right. But, you know, when I see people walking outside and it's not raining, and especially men, grown men, they're out there and they're holding umbrellas just in case it might rain, I see that as a sign of weakness, sir,
really?
In a person. I am quietly judging that person, and I see it as a sign of weakness.
What if they just like their clothes? I don't know.
No, it's a sign of weakness when you're carrying around an umbrella just in case it might rain. It's like men who eat hamburgers with a wrapper still on it. It's a sign of weakness.
And again, I bet you that's a clothes, respect of your clothing thing.
whatever it is.
When you spend more than $12 on a T-shirt,
that's
you probably
right.
want to protect it a little.
No, you don't. You're just afraid of hamburgers and weather. That's all you are.
What's your favorite ballpark food, Jay?
Ballpark food?
Now. Like, and you know what? Let's make that even more specific. What was your favorite food stand at the Big O?
I always liked the kosher beef hot dogs.
Okay.
I always liked that.
Marco says no. Marco
no?
Polo?
What do you got?
Plastivere, man.
I figured.
Plastivere, yeah. I don't. You know what? Too many times I went. Now,
Jay, in the sake of reciprocity, Marco,
yes.
Marco,
I want
went,
slices of pizza that are bigger than the plate they come on.
Marco
That's
Polo
true.
Went with the Italian option. You just went with the very Jewish option. I feel like I should say Kojak's just to even it out.
Yes, that way, yeah, we're all even now. I don't know. There was a couple of times I went there and the dough was a little undercooked.
Ah, Marco,
and
that's
tier.
Part of the charm. I only say you scum compared to crusty.
It's not part of the charm when the person I was sitting with dry heaved all over the person in front of them when
Aww.
They took a bite out of the dough. But I mean, that was a one-time incident, and I'm sure it never happened ever again.
No, never again.
Well, when you're serving thousands of pieces of pizza, I could imagine that something eventually is going to go wrong. But the pizza was excellent.
Serving
but
poop for profit? What could go wrong?
Well, how about when you have to buy enough food to assume that 45,000 people are showing up and then 4,000 people show up?
I
that probably makes for
do.
A very stale next day's bread.
It really does. It really does. But I always liked that. Do you remember it was, you know, the older Jewish guy with his son and they had just this little stand. And I think it was around section 104, 105. It was around back of home plate, and they would sell off these big kosher hot dogs, and they're great, all beef hot dogs.
Mo Khan weighing in on Twitter, and I am in agreement with Mr. Khan. The beaver tails were excellent at the Olympic Stadium.
I never ate them.
No.
Nah, I don't like sweet foods.
Okay.
I don't have a sweet tooth.
I was always
terrified.
I need
salty and meaty.
I was terrified of the hot dogs at the end, I'm not going to lie.
Were you?
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm sure that they were from 2003.
Yeah, they were.
They just had a surplus of hot dogs. Oh, let's sell them for 70 cents.
Yeah, but this guy was his own stand. It wasn't part of, you know, it was different. It wasn't the conventional hot dog, you know. It was in the all-beef kosher hot dogs. You could see that they were fresh. I liked it. I liked it a lot. They were amazing.
I can picture where that one was. And, of course, as a kid, it was the ice cream joint with the baseball cup bowls.
Yeah, the helmets.
It was all about collecting those helmets.
Yeah, there are some people who still have those little helmets.
See, like, is there that same pull for any other food at a sporting event in this city anymore? Like, do people crave a Bell Center hot dog or an Alouettes something?
You do when you get there.
Do you?
I think it hits you when you actually walk in. And there's
no, it hits you when you're about to pay, and they're like, no. Nah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
$400.
Yeah. you could eat a whole meal before you go to a hockey game, but once you walk in, you have one beer, you're thinking to yourself, hot dogs look good right now.
Or smell good.
Yes.
There's still no poutine at the Bell Center, right?
There isn't?
No, I don't think so. There used to be, I remember, but I feel like I've searched high and low for it.
I think they had them at ball games, too. Remember that?
They
little,
did have poutine at ball games.
Remember the burger
sure,
joint,
man.
The Montreal
Expo Burger?
Expo Burger.
That was right when you walked in where the...
That's right.
Where back in the day they used to have the guy, the music after the games.
Yes. What was his name?
Oh, goodness.
I remember the guy's name. I don't know. I remember he had a
it
cool
little
headset.
It wasn't Fernand LaPierre, was it?
It wasn't. I think it was a little bit, but then they had some younger... It was so cheesy. It was so bad. But I remember the guy, he was there for quite a while when I was a kid. He had a beard.
To be fair, I know a lot more about Francophone rock music than I ever thought I would because of going to all those Expos games.
Really?
Jean-Ton Frappé.
Yeah.
And that song's...
Michel Pagliaro.
That's right. It's indelibly marked in my brain, that song.
Yes.
I know it from the Olympic Stadium.
Yes.
And then he played halftime at... It must have been a Grey Cup or something because I saw him sing it live at the Big O and I just thought, this is perfect.
That was such a good song. That's a great song either way, not just because
it's French.
I heard all
what
I learned all about. No, I mean, not
can
just
you wear a hijab and enjoy that song?
Not
that's
just,
my question.
Just
to you,
because
Jay.
It was played at a ball game because there are some really bad music played at ball games. So
when we did our Believer Fever show last week,
yes,
I went. Through, I did some research and tried to figure out what songs were like really popular in 2003.
Right,
and very quickly I realized I'm not playing this garbage on the radio.
No, I know it's not listenable. It's not listenable.
And if you think about it back at the end at ball games, yeah, the music was often atrocious. There was a ton of Black Eyed Peas. They used to come out, the Expos, to the Black Eyed Peas.
Yes.
To the Let's Get It Started.
Not the Let's Get Retarded one.
No, definitely not. All right. Definitely not that one.
Maybe in 2004. I think they changed it to Let's Get Retarded. But before that, Let's Get It Started. They had a good season. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, I can picture Orlando Cabrera sitting there getting pumped up with that song starting and then them running on the field.
Do you remember the theme songs to some of the Expos in the 1990s?
I remember the Coca-Cola one.
What?
Which I think Joe Jammer wrote.
Actual players when they came up to bat.
Like Crazy Train for Mike Lansing?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Delino was...
Bop.
It was Never Gonna Get It by In Vogue.
That's right. Yeah, which is weird, but...
A little,
yeah.
But again, the bop part worked. What was Marquise Grissom's?
Oh, Marquise Grissom. Jeez. I forget. It was pretty groovy, if I remember it. What I don't remember. I remember Larry Walker was Walk This Way for a little while until they changed it.
To what?
I forget.
Was it AC/DC maybe for Walker?
Something,
was it
yeah.
Thunderstruck?
Yeah. John Wentley would come up to Wild Thing. Whenever he would come in to save a game, I remember that.
For me, then we're going to take a break off this song. This is the one that I heard the most at the Olympic Stadium, by far. Tell me if you agree, Jay. I'd say at least 50% of the time. To play that whenever the Expos lost a game, as you'd walk out of the stadium, it was "I Can't Stand Losing" by the Police.
So upbeat too. It's like you'd think they'd play something else, but it's so upbeat.
I think they very tactfully didn't play it at the last game.
For me, it was J'entends Frapper and Blitzkrieg Bop.
Blitzkrieg
I would
Bop.
Hear that all the time.
Tons of Blitzkrieg Bop. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they would never play the whole song. Only the
let's go. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. But yeah, this is, for me, this is walking out of the Big O 50% of the time. We're back. It's the Kaufman Show. Priming you with all this nighttime music. If you haven't heard our late night version of this Kaufman Show before, I do encourage you to keep the dial on 690. And join us late Monday nights where we're going to have some fun. We're going to make you think. Speak to some old friends. Speak to some new ones. And keep doing what we do. Because we love this stuff. And we can't wait to do it. After Monday Night Football, right here on TSN 690. So that's going to pretty much wrap up this week's Kaufman Show. You had fun, Jay?
Always.
Feel a little bit more ready to go for your fantasy draft tonight?
No.
Me neither.
No. I'm so unprepared. And actually, having Mo on made me a little more nervous than I was before.
Well, I know that wasn't the intention, so...
Yeah.
Please don't blame me if you totally screw it up tonight.
No, I just... scrambling to write down notes and do mathematical equations. It just scares me. I feel like the first day of school. I feel like I'm going to the CJEP or something.
Long division and radio do not go well together.
Oh,
that's
God.
For sure.
There's a reason why we're on the radio.
Jay, thank you so much for joining tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
Can't wait to get back to those late hours with you.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Good to be back for the full 2 hours.
It is.
Instead of 8 seconds and then running in and running out.
That's right. Well, we won't be running into that anymore, so that's going to be great. I want to thank Marco Polo on the board and our guests tonight, Mo Khan, Torben Rolfson, and Jim Friedman, the director of Glickman, the new HBO film that I really have nothing but amazing things to say about. You guys should totally check out that movie.
Great story.
Call me next week and we'll talk about it on The Kaufman Show.
Listen up, kid, it's not what you think. Stayed out too late, had a little too much to drink. Walk home across the bridge when the marquee shut down. There's a reason that I love this town. Nobody cares how much money you have. If you've got enough to get in a cab, there'll be drinks on the house. If your house burns down, there's a reason that I love this town. I saw your band in the early days. We all understand why you moved away. We'll hold a grudge anyway. I shot the shit with miniature Tim. If he needs a tune, then I'll write one for him. We like the same books and we like the same sounds. There's a reason that I love this town. I played a show in Kelowna last year. Said, pick it up, Joel, we're dying in here. Picture one hand clapping, then picture half that sound. There's a reason that I hate that town. If you saw my band in the early days, then you understand why we moved away. But you hold a grudge anyway, because it's fun. Davey and me, face down in our suit, some French restaurant, I saw Riviere de Loup. Last night at the tour, we burnt the place to the ground. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town. There's a reason that I love this town.
What'd that sound like?